You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the official FWA podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio and live on the line. Interrupting his holiday, I am. It's Neil Moxley, the chief sports writer for the Sunday People. Neil, first of all, good morning, a warm welcome.
Good morning to you, Dave. Warm welcome from the island of Tenerife as well.
Sorry about this, Neil. I didn't even realise you were away when we set this up. I do apologise, sir.
No problem, sir.
Neil, you brought the story about Tim Sherwood's impending doom a few weeks ago. Is Tim Sherwood a man you know well, first of all?
Not particularly, Dave. It was new to me. Obviously, you go into when you get a new manager on your patch, you try and do your due diligence and find out what sort of bloke they are, and he seemed to be. Exactly, in my dealings with him, he seems to be exactly as everybody said he would. He was very open, he was as honest as he could be, and, you know, he was enthusiastic. It was just a shame it really didn't work out for him at Aston Villa, because a young, energetic, bright manager like Tim Sherwood was pretty much what the club wanted.
Do you think it was the right time for him to leave?
No, I don't, actually. I think with the benefit of hindsight, and hey, we're all experts with hindsight, I think the major issue with Tim and Aston Villa Football Club was the recruitment of players during the summer. And really and truthfully speaking, his stock was at its highest during immediately after the FA Cup final. He'd completed the brief in so much as he'd kept Aston Villa in the Premier League. He'd got them to the FA Cup final. I know that was a major disappointment for everybody that was associated with the club. And really and truthfully speaking, he should have then gone to the board, said, "What is the situation with players? I want to bring in X, Y and Z." And if they had said no, then Tim Sherwood could have left Aston Villa with his head held high, because quite frankly, at the moment, he's going to find it difficult to jump back straight back into a job in the Premier League, given what's happened since then.
Do you think he was slightly naive then, Neil?
Yeah, I think a more experienced manager might well have taken a step back, Dave, and been able to, you know, weigh up exactly what it is that he wanted to do, exactly what needed to be done. It didn't take a rocket scientist to work out that somebody might have come in for Christian Benteke, who was a major sort of reason why Villa have stayed up during the Paul Lambert reign. Without his goals, they would have sunk without trace. Once it became clear that Fabian Delph had a release clause in his contract at £8 million, then it was pretty clear as well that somebody was going to take a gamble on Fabian Delph, because, you know, he's a driving force in that Villa midfield, and to lose two players of that quality was a real blow for the club.
We have got betting on the website now for next permanent Aston Villa manager, and Remy Gard is the 4-11 favourite. This has been, as all manager markets are here with William Hill, Neil, quite a volatile market. Remy Gard, short price now at 4-11. Christophe Gaultier, 9-2. Nigel Pearson is 6-1. David Moyes, 8-1. Brendan Rodgers is 14s. Justin Edinburgh is 14-1, and it's 20-1. And bigger the remainder. Obviously, as you've mentioned, you work in the area. That's your patch. Have you had any insight into who will be next permanent Villa manager?
Well, there only seems to be one horse in the race at the moment, from where I'm standing, Dave, and that's Remy Gard. For some reason, best known to himself, he's a man of we've had scant contact with over the last few years. Randy Lerner, I don't think, seems to want David Moyes at the football club, because I think that would have been my choice given the state that it's in at the moment. I can't quite understand why Justin Edinburgh is in the betting at all, frankly. I'm sure he's did a great job in Newport, but I can't really see that the leap to a Premier League with a struggling Aston Villa is going to prove any value in that one, Dave. But for me, it's Remy Gard, and then it's everyone else. He's on the outside looking in.
Okay, Remy Gard looks like the pick there at 4-11. Looks like he will get the job. Do you think it's a poison chalice, Aston Villa manager, at the moment, or do you think they've got the personnel there to stay in the Premier League?
No, I don't think it is a poison chalice. That's why I think it's whenever you make an appointment in any walk of life, Dave, you do it to minimise risk. Where you minimise as much risk as you possibly can. And employing a French manager who knows pretty much nothing about this league seems to me to be a huge gamble on behalf of the people that are running Aston Villa Football Club. having seen the team three or four times this season, I don't think they've got what it takes as it stands at the moment to stay in the Premier League. I just don't think the players are good enough. That, you know, they need to go out and need to somehow be within 4 or 5 points of the you know, the drop zone, of the cut-off point at the turn of the year, and then they need to make some very astute signings. You know, Sunderland haven't messed about. Effectively, they went to Sam Allardyce and said, look, you know, what do you want to manage this football club? And as I understand it from speaking to some close contacts of Sam's, he's got his autobiography coming out, and he had absolutely no plans whatsoever to come back into the game. But they've, you know, pretty much stuck a stake in the ground. It's reached instant reward, and now Aston Villa have got something else to worry about. And obviously with a new TV deal coming in next year, everybody's got one eye on that, Dave. So they're all going to be clawing each other's eyes out to stay in the league. And for me, bringing in Remy Gard is just would just be another nail in the coffin. Quite frankly, he doesn't know the players, he doesn't know the league, he doesn't know his opponents. He didn't know, you know, any potential recruits he can bring in who aren't French, who I would imagine that wouldn't help Aston Villa. I just see it as being another nail in the coffin, Dave, quite frankly.
Okay. Hopefully no Aston Villa fans are listening to this podcast this morning.
Yeah. I do apologise for that, to be honest. They're not going to be too happy with me, although, when I walk back in the pub on next week, but still, there you go.
No, we promote full transparency on this podcast, so it's nice that you're being honest, Neil. Don't sugarcoat it for them.
No. Well, there you go. Nobody gets any benefit if you sugarcoat it, Dave. So let's might as well crack on. I mean, I just don't see at the moment where there are you know, two, three worst teams in Aston Villa as it stands.
Yeah.
So I mean, watch the sad demise of the club over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. This is something that's been very much coming, I'm afraid.
Let's get stuck into this weekend's live televised matches then, Neil. We'll start with Chelsea versus Liverpool, Saturday, 12:45. Chelsea 21-20, the draw 9-4, and Liverpool in the market at 14-5. Intriguing game, this one, Neil. Chelsea obviously struggling this season. Jose Mourinho has been taking plenty of stick in the press, and things seem to be a bit unsettled behind the scenes as well. Beaten by Stoke in the Capital One Cup on Tuesday night. Down in 15th in the league, Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Stamford Bridge a couple of weeks ago to see them play Villa. And having been a regular visitor there last season, the difference in atmosphere around the place and the quality of football they're actually providing on the field as well is stark, Dave. You get a smell when you've been doing this job for quite a while, as I have. It's well over 2 decades now. Sadly for a lot of people who read my stuff, but you know, you do get a smell for certain things. You get a smell for clubs that are struggling, a smell for clubs that are going to do really well, teams that are going to do really well. And to be honest with you, there is just not a good smell around Chelsea Football Club at the moment. If I didn't know any better, I'd think that Jose Mourinho was trying to work his ticket out of there. Every single Saturday appears to be an opportunity for him to throw a strop of some sort or another and for his team to underperform. You know, it's an age-old tactic of Mourinho's to sort of deflect all the attention onto himself and away from his players whenever something goes wrong. But I just think this is just some of this stuff is just unnecessary. I mean, look at last week at West Ham, for instance. There was no real reason for him to act in the manner he did. You know, Matic's sending off, certainly the second yellow card, was entirely warranted. It was senseless, and really and truthfully speaking, he needs to have a look at some of his players. We're told that all is not well there behind the scenes with Eden Hazard. He's got the Eva Canero thing kicking off as well in the background. It's just, obviously they've been dumped out of the Capital One Cup now. It just doesn't smell right there at the moment, Dave. And if I was looking for a value bet this weekend, then I'd probably put my money on Jurgen Klopp's team at 14-5 to follow in the footsteps of teams like Crystal Palace and come away with a victory at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, nice. Liverpool 14-5 to win that game. Looks a good bet. The cynics amongst us would suggest that Jose Mourinho signed that new lengthy contract and he's just a few months into it now. Neil, and he's working a position. He rarely stays at a club longer than 3 years, does he? And we're at the 3 year mark now with Chelsea.
Yeah, there is that. But I mean, I've been to a couple of his press conferences. It seems to be, particularly the one after the Palace game, actually, earlier this season. He seemed to suggest he had a meeting with the people that matter around about the end of April, with respect to the recruitment that he wanted to carry out this summer. and for whatever reason, it wasn't carried out to his satisfaction. Now, whether or not Mourinho's just decided at that point, right, I can't possibly, you know, if I can't do what I want, then basically I'm getting out of here or not, I don't know. You know, he's a better. You'd like to think he was a better man than that, and you'd like to think he was a better manager than that. But you know, if any manager, and we just refer to Tim Sherwood, has his hands tied by other people, then the top and bottom of it is, Dave, that they're going to they're going to feel that somewhat undermined. And like I say, if I didn't know any better, I would try to think that he was trying to work his ticket, which obviously leads very nicely onto the next manager to leave the Premier League market, doesn't it? So yeah, that'd be where my money would go at the moment.
He does indeed. 14-5 Liverpool to win that game. If you're looking at the manager markets here with William Hill, we do have them on the football specials page. Next Premier League manager to leave, Jose Mourinho, odds on now. Odds on now, Neil. 5-6 he is to be the next manager to leave his position. Steve McLaren in that market, 9-4. Gary Monk, 11-1. Alex Neil, 12-1 in its 20s. And bigger the rest. So maybe have a look at Mourinho in that market. Everton versus Sunderland, Sunday 1:30 p.m. Everton 1-2, the draw 3-1. Sunderland in the market at 6-1. Everton beat Norwich on Tuesday night in the Capital One Cup, winning 4-3 on penalties. Pretty short price here to beat Sunderland. You mentioned Sunderland earlier on in the podcast with Sam Allardyce now at the helm. How do you see this match panning out?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to call. I can't see that Sam Allardyce is going to attack every single game that he goes into, Dave. It just doesn't befit the style of the man. You know, he's very well organised. He's one who's placed a lot of emphasis on statistics within the game. He knows his teams know what they want and generally very well set up. And even in a short space of time, I think he'll have wasted no second on the training pitch drilling his players into exactly what it is that he wants. And obviously that victory over Newcastle United last week, that's just given him sort of perfect breathing space to carry, you know, to certainly with the punters, to hammer home his messages. And put quite frankly, I think that Everton look a bit short to me at that. And if I was looking for a bet in that one, I'd probably take the draw at 3-1. It's been a funny old week, hasn't it, Everton? Obviously with Howard Kendall's funeral yesterday and the emotion of that. I think that weighed heavily on the club. That news broke on the morning of the game against Manchester United. I did think that would have an effect, so it proved. It was a bit of a lacklustre performance from Roberto Martinez's men. But, you know, they're going to be, you know, I agree with most of my fellow pundits, they're going to be sort of in and around the 6th, 7th, 8th mark, I think, come the end of the season, expecting a lot from the likes of, you know, Ross Barkley, now that he seems to have found Roberto Martinez seems to have found a proper home for him. And also, you know, that they seem to have, the loss of Jackie Elker will be a bit of a blow for them. I don't think they've got too much cover at the back, but I still think they've got enough potency going forward, you know, to score a few goals. The longer the game goes on, the deeper you can see Sunderland dropping back and protecting that point. I think if essentially, Dave, that will come down to if Everton or whether or not the deadlock can be broken first, and if Everton can get off to a flying start, that'll be interesting to see how Sunderland react, because obviously the game plan, I would think, would be first and foremost to protect the point.
Yeah, absolutely. The draw's 3-1 here with William Hill. The 0-0 draw could be worth a look. That's 11-1 here with William Hill, the 0-0 draw in that game. The Sunday 4 p.m. game is Southampton versus Bournemouth. Southampton 4-7 to win it. The draw is 14-5, Bournemouth 5-1. I fear for Bournemouth a little bit. Now, Neil, because they've got a lot of injuries, clearly struggling, conceded 10 goals in 2 Premier League matches now. It's going to be difficult, I think, after Christmas for Bournemouth.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. It's the loss of Callum Wilson is just massive for them. I mean, I've singled out Wilson in particular. I know they've got other injuries with the likes of Mings and the rest of them not having really featured this season. But the Wilson gave them something up front. He gave them the ability to stretch defences. And without him, without his pace, really, they're going to struggle. I know that they've got the likes of Glenn Murray up front, but Murray's not really like that. He's not really got the pace to really get in and behind and stretch and cause defences problems. And obviously, Southampton's, particularly last season, was one of the tightest in the Premier League. And with the addition of Virgil van Dijk, who seems to have settled in quite nicely from Celtic this season, I think Bournemouth have got it all to do. I really fear for them like you do, Dave, which is a shame because they've come up and they came up the right way playing attractive football.
Yes.
And they sort of Eddie Howe stuck his stake in the ground early on and sort of said, look, you know, the only way to prosper, or we feel the way to prosper, is by playing decent football again. And I can't disagree with you, Dave. I fear for them as well. And it's difficult to look beyond anything other than the Southampton victory, possibly by one or more goals as well.
Yeah, I can see that. Southampton minus one in the match is 11-8. If you fancy Southampton just in the 90-minute mark, it 4-7. But they could concede a few, I fear, for Bournemouth, and they could concede a few. And have a look at Graziano Pella as well to score first and last. He's 7-2 to score first, 7-2 to score last. I've been impressed by Pella. He's had a lot of shots this season. Not all of them have gone in, but he's got 5 goals in the Premier League so far.
Yeah, I think he's one of the unsung heroes, particularly in the way that Southampton sort of set up to play. You know, Ricky Lambert was obviously very instrumental in their success rising through the leagues, and he was a big voice in the dressing room as well. And obviously with Lambert's departure at the start of last season, there was a lot of pressure on Pella's shoulders to try and to sort of emulate that. And to be fair, you know, it's not always that foreign players step into our league, and I'm not being xenophobic, it's just a fact. I make the sort of, you know, make sort of impression that everybody hopes they will. But Pelle's one of those who seems to be absolutely at home on the South Coast, and he's been an integral part of everything that Ronald Koeman has actually brought to Southampton during the past 12 months. I mean, I like Koeman. I mean, you know, he's not afraid to throw the kids in. He's managed some massive clubs in terms of Ajax and a couple of the other clubs in Holland. Mm. And to be honest with you, he's really impressed me as a boss since he's stepped into the shoes. Because it would have been, you know, a lot of people would have said, you know, when he took the job away, much further can he take them? And let's have a look at it at the moment. They're one of the best organised teams in the league. They've managed to keep that sort of inner core of steel in the running through the side. And like you say, with the likes of Van Dijk and Pelle, and obviously the midfielders that's remained, probably against his will a little bit, Victor Wanyama, I really like him. They seem to have a really strong strong spine, Dave. And I do like Matt Ritchie. There was rumours if he was on the radar of Manchester United late in the summer. But I just don't see that Bournemouth are going to have the firepower or the nous to get past what is, I believe, a very well drilled and very well organised Southampton team.
The weekend finishes, Neil, with a trip to White Hart Lane on Monday night. Tottenham versus Aston Villa, 2-5 Tottenham. The draw 100-30. Aston Villa 6-1. Will you be back for this one, Neil?
No, I'm travelling, but I'll be sitting in a bar probably watching it with my fingers halfway across my eyes, because obviously what Villa didn't really need was for Tottenham to have warmed up nicely for this fixture at the Lane with you know, by putting 5 past Bournemouth at the weekend, and for Harry Kane to have grabbed his first hat-trick of the season. You know, there's every excuse for Villa not to win this one. I know Kevin McDonald personally. He's a great fella. He sprang a bit of a selection surprise in midweek at Southampton's. Villa went down in the Capital One Cup by shaking it up in midfield. I just can't see Villa, you know, troubling the scorers again there. Like I say, I don't think it's going to be for the want of trying. They ran around quite energetically for half an hour at Stamford Bridge a couple of weeks ago, and then they basically threw one in their own net with a horrendous mistake, and you could visibly see the confidence drain from them, you know, just watching some of the players there. I mean, Gestede's a handful. I would imagine he'll cause the Tottenham back line one or two. If they can get some supply into him, he seems to know where the net is.
Yeah.
But it's looking a tall order from here, Dave, to see anything other than a Spurs victory, and that probably is probably reflected in the price, isn't it?
It is 2-5 Tottenham to win the game. The draw 100-30, Villa 6-1. How easy do you think it will end up being for Spurs on Monday night?
Well, again, in a lot of these fixtures, Dave, the sort of complexion of football matches changes the earlier the first goal goes in. People have to toss game plans out the window, or you know, revise what they were planned to set up to do. And I see that being the key to this one as well. If Spurs can score early on, you can see them romping home, quite frankly. But again, if Villa can sort of manage to squeeze away to half time without without having conceded, it'll fill them with a great deal of confidence. A lot really does depend, Dave, on how Spurs approach this match. You know, it's a live Monday night fixture. There's always a bit of glitz and glamour with those sort of games. Just because the whole country's finished work, it's November, and pretty much they want to sit down and watch a decent game of football. So the top and bottom is if Spurs are at it, if they're bang on their game, then I do think they should be. They should try. It'd be interesting to see. Obviously, a lot was made of Christian Eriksen's role in the defeat of Bournemouth last week, particularly with his supply for a couple of the goals to Harry Kane. And it'd be interesting to see, if Mauricio Pochettino actually fancies starting with him, because I'd like to see more of him. I think he's got the X factor, and I think he's the sort of player that really, given the experience he's now picked up over the last 12 months in the English game, really could thrive this season.
Definitely. Harry Kane, by the way, odds on to score any time. Harry Kane, 3-4 to score any time. Christian Eriksen is 5-4, so slight odds against for him to score any time on Monday night. What's the best bet? I'll let you enjoy the rest of your holiday very shortly, Neil. What's the best bet this weekend?
I'd probably take Manchester City on the handicap, actually, Dave. I wasn't impressed with the manner in which Alex Neil set up Norwich City to play Newcastle a couple of weeks ago. They went and had a game of football with them. If they follow suit at the Etihad, they could end up on the end of a big thumping. I know last week Manchester Derby was ended up being a bit of a down squib. That was probably more to do with the fact that both teams had been involved in Champions League action during the week. But with a thumping victory behind them in the Capital One Cup, and at the moment they just seem to have got goals aplenty about them, Manchester City. I just fancy that they could if not manage a repeat of the 7 goals they thumped past Norwich in a couple of years ago, they could certainly get somewhere close. At the moment, they seem to be pretty irresistible at home.
Yeah, some nice prices on the handicaps here. Man City -1 is a short price, as you would imagine, at 13-20. Odds against Man City -2 at 17-10. And if you do fancy Man City -3, that's 4-1 here with William Hill. So that looks a big price as well. Neil, thank you for your company on this Friday morning. Hopefully we'll catch up again soon. Remember, if you want to follow Neil on Twitter, chief sports writer for the Sunday People, @Neil_Moxley, and you can follow myself @DKellner. Thank you, Neil.
That's been my pleasure, Dave. It's been lovely to speak to you. Hope I've made some sense.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.